Whoever you are, we welcome you. Wherever you come from, we welcome you. Whomever you love, we welcome you. My name is Bonnie Harper, and I am today's worship associate. I am joined by the Reverend Elaine Strong. Reverend Strong grew up in a United Methodist parsonage. She received her Master's of Divinity from Wesley Theological at American University in Washington, D.C., and her Doctor of Ministry from the Meadville Lombard Theological School in Chicago. Her focus there was the stages of spiritual growth. Since 1996, she has served as the minister at the Unitarian Universalist Fellowship in Wayne County in Worcester, Ohio. She currently lives with her partner, Jane Harkey, in Akron. Everyone wants to live on the top of the mountain, but all the happiness and growth occurs while you're climbing it. New ways and old. New choices always seem so good at first, heralding a new way of being in the world, happy, energetic, focused. Soon, though, something within begins to grumble and draws the spirit back to the old way. What to do with that grumbling something to persuade it that it's okay to feel good? The new way says, let it be and love it. The old way, of course, will have none of that. Gradually, year by year, the old way retires. New ways creep in, and the spirit persists. I stopped growing physically years ago. I haven't been growing educationally for quite a few years, the old way. My children are adults, so I am no longer growing my parenting skills, the old way. When I retired, I stopped growing professionally, the old way. But have I stopped growing and learning? Oh, I certainly hope not. In fact, as I give up some of the old ways of growing, I am more open to explore the whole new world of possibilities for learning and for growth. And I plan to keep exploring those new avenues of growth for the rest of my days. In the spirit of new possibilities, come, let us worship together.
Good morning. I stole the wisdom words from the district assembly yesterday from a children's librarian named Martha Courteau. Crossing a creek requires three things: a certain serenity of mind, bare feet, and a sure trust that the snake we know slides silently underwater just beyond our vision. We'll choose to ignore the flesh that cuts through its territory, and we will pass through. Some people think crossing a creek is easy, but I say this: all crossings are hard, whether creeks, mountains, or into other lives. And we must always believe in the snakes at our feet, just out of our vision. And we must practice believing we will come through.
I invite you now to quiet yourself and spend a few moments in silence, setting aside everyday concerns and being open to what you find here. Please join us in the spirit of prayer.
As we continue in this quietude, this focused being, we tap into the spirit that is different for each of us, but is intensely personal. We tap into that which calls us to be the best in ourselves, the most compassionate in our vision in the world. We listen for the call of what it means to be a Unitarian Universalist. We commit ourselves to being present to the concerns and to the joys of those around us, those that are spoken and those that are not. We covenant to be a vital part of this community, sharing our challenges, our strengths, our joys, our compassion, our love. And we are grateful. Grateful for this beloved community, this grounding, this love, this support that carries us through our week, challenges us through our lives, remains a presence with us. Amen and blessed be. The ancient reading for this morning comes from the text written by Confucius's followers in the 6th and the 5th centuries BCE from the Analects. The philosopher Tsang said, "I daily examine myself on 3 points. Whether in transacting business for others I may have been not faithful, whether in intercourse with friends I may have been not sincere, whether I may have not mastered and practiced the instructions of my teacher." The master said, "To rule a country of 1,000 chariots, there must be reverent attention to business and sincerity, economy and expenditure, and love for men, the employment of the people at the proper seasons. If the people be led by laws and uniformity sought to be given to them by punishments, they will try to avoid the punishment, but they will have no sense of shame. If they be led by virtue and uniformity sought to be given them by the rules of propriety, they will have a sense of shame and moreover will become good. At 15, I had my mind bent on learning. At 30, I stood firm. At 40, I had no doubts. At 50, I knew the degrees of heaven. At 60, my ear was an obedient organ for the reception of truth. At 70, I could follow what my heart desired without transgressing what was right. There were 4 things from which the master was entirely free. He had no foregone conclusions, no arbitrary predeterminations, no obstinacy, and no egoism." The contemporary reading comes from Stephen Prothrow, who you may know if you watch the PBS series God in America. He was very often interviewed. He's also the one who came up with the Bible IQ test that was in USA Today to prove to us all that we really knew nothing about that text. He writes in the book, God is Not One, "Every year I tell my Boston University undergraduates that there are 2 worthy pursuits for college students. One is pre-professional, preparing for a career that will put food on the table and a roof overhead. The other is more personal, finding big questions worth asking, which is to say questions that cannot be answered in a semester or even a lifetime or more. How do things come into being? How do they cease to be? How does change happen? How does anything stay the same? What is the self? Who or what is God? What happens when we die? Is predictability as follows: summer after summer, incoming college students bring into the classrooms big questions of this sort. One of the most common misconceptions about the world's religions is that they plumb the same depths, ask the same questions, but they do not. Only religions that see God as all good ask how a God can allow millions to die in tsunamis. Only religions that believe in souls ask whether your soul exists before you were born and what happens to it after you die. And only religions that think they have one soul ask after the soul in the singular. Every religion, however, asks the human condition. Here we are in these human bodies. What now? What next? What are we to become? For me, this is a reminder not of the unity of the world's religions, as Ramakrishna and the perennialists would have us believe, or of the shared stupidity, as Sachs and the new atheists would argue, but of the limits of human knowledge. It is commonplace to think of religions as unchanging dogmas demanding unqualified assent. And there are no doubt fundamentalists inside most religions who see things just this way. But one function of the transcendent is to humble us, to remind us that our thoughts are not the thoughts of God or of the great goddess, to remind us that at least for the time being, we see through a glass darkly. Yes, religious people offer solutions to the human predicament as they see it. These solutions inevitably open up more questions than they close down. This is definitely true of Confucius and Hillel, who perhaps more than any of the figures discussed in this book followed Rilke's quote, "Love the questions themselves." I think you know that Melissa journeyed to Meadville, Pennsylvania this morning, and the Meadville, Pennsylvania person went to Worcester, and I got to come here. And next week we get to have Christy Anderson in Worcester, and I'm looking forward to, they are looking forward to that. I will miss that. As Melissa and I talked about what might be a pertinent sermon for the Kent congregation on this morning, she said, well, we've been looking at growth, we've been looking at development. And I said, well, my field, my special interest is the stages of spiritual growth. And she said, that sounds fine. What I didn't say to her, but I will warn you, is that this is my field. And so, therefore, I started preaching this morning about 8. I'll be done on Tuesday. And if you would like to roam around during that time, you may. But for those of you who have things to do, the answer to the question posed in the sermon, do we have to do religious education all of our lives? The answer is yes. Religion is not easy. It's called a discipline for a particular reason. And the answer, the reason that we're never finished with religious education is because the questions keep changing. You know, the Hindu paradigm is that you spend part of your life being a student, you spend part of your life being a home builder and an earner, and then you spend part of your life on retreat, and finally then you become a sage. It's this incredible circular piece. We start in this unitive way when we're born. We can't discriminate ourselves from anyone around us. It's all of a piece. And little by little, we learn that we are we and everyone else is everyone else, and we are the most important. And then we learn more and more things as we go along. We have to learn to talk. We have to learn to walk. Everyone celebrates when we have accomplished potty training. We have to learn to read. We have to learn to play well with others. But it goes on. We have to learn to pass math. We have to learn how to enter into the world. We have to learn how to be accepted by our peers, and then we have to move beyond that so that our locus of control isn't external anymore, so that we respond to that which calls us. Our reason kicks in, our rationality kicks in. We start evaluating life from how it affects us and how it makes sense. And then finally, something even larger than that calls us. We have to learn how to relax. We have to learn how to retire. We have to learn how to age graciously. We have to learn how to go from being drastically independent to sometimes, as I watched with my mother, allowing someone to clean you up, allowing someone to be that intimate and that close, and to do that graciously. I can't tell you how much admiration I had for her as she did that. The questions keep changing. The questions of life keep changing. Peter Morales said yesterday that spiritual growth is all about breaking walls. Spiritual growth is all about breaking walls, about that expansive. So we start unitively. We end in the same way. But we haven't done it. We aren't there in exactly the same place that we started. Now, we Unitarian Universalists have a long history of lifespan education. And we have a long history of understanding that part of spiritual growth is increasing our skill set. Sophia Lyon-Foss, when she put together the Beacon series and headed us down kind of a humanistic path for religious education, you remember, said, teach children what they're ready to learn. If they're in concrete thinking, if they're beyond that, if they're in abstract thinking, tailor it to the person. Don't break the child when they're angry. Don't break their will. Teach them more skills. Teach them that when they're frustrated, the only answer isn't slamming the door. There are so many other things that they can do. Because the child is good. Confucius believed that as we learn, we are moral. And as we learn to become more moral, we become more human. As we become Junzi, as we become an example human being, as we learn Ren, as we learn human-heartedness, as we learn right relations, and as we learn propriety, makes ritual, that's the word that makes people in Worcester nervous. I don't know if it makes you nervous or not. But as we learn, though, as we put that Ren into action, as we learn the ways to be in the world that allows for other people, that allows us to be in that sense, that's when we become human. Part of the reason I chose Confucius for this morning is because he just sounds so Unitarian Universalist to me. He's a teacher. He said, we don't really need to talk about heaven. We don't know much about that. Let's focus on here. He is born into a China filled with chaos in the Zhou dynasty. He says, let me teach you how society can function. We can all do this together. He teaches orthopraxis, not orthodoxy. So if the question were asked, and if we were in an orthodoxy, right belief, then the answer would be, as soon as you're done with confirmation and you can pass the test, you're done. Unfortunately, with orthopraxy, if, as Unitarian Universalists do religion, it's about the action and about the practice, you are done when the last question is asked. You're done when the last transition occurs, and you have been able to adapt to that. You might argue that tennis has absolutely nothing to do with theology, and it probably doesn't. Susan Ritchie down at North Church would disagree with that. If you think about tennis, orthodoxy would be to choose a spot somewhere on the court and plant your feet and wait for the ball to come. You're planted solidly. You have had many lessons. You're holding the racket in the right place. You know all the skills and all the moves. You've planted your feet in one spot. If your competitor is any good at all, they're going to make sure the ball doesn't come there. Tennis is about being grounded and yet being light of foot at the same time. That's spiritual growth. Because spiritual growth is not about learning things. That's hard for us, because even though we are a people who are focused on action and behavior, we want to learn so much because we live up here. And yet, what our tradition calls us to do is to integrate all of those things and to use them. I failed at that in December. That's not the first time. I was part of Leadership Worcester's Diversity Day. In Worcester, when Leadership Worcester needs to do a diversity day, they call the Jews and the Unitarians. There's a Muslim in the community somewhere. I meet him that day also. And the people, the business community of Worcester passes through and they put us in tables singularly and we talk about our tradition and they ask us questions. And so we pass through and they ask questions and sometimes their eyes get really big. But on this particular December, I was talking about Unitarian Universalism and there was a young man to my right who's first when he came, he was only blushed up to here, but I could see it rising the longer that I talked. And finally he said, "Do you mean to tell me that in your tradition you interpret the Bible culturally?" Now, if I had been in a tennis stance, I could have said yes, and let's talk about that, because you do too. And we could have had a lovely discussion. But I was in orthodoxy stance and went into my straight-backed Unitarian Universalism and my former Methodist fear and sputtered. Went into defensive stance. Folks in the Worcester congregation say, "You know how conservative this town is." And when I have experiences like that, I remember that it is. And it's so easy for us to go into defensive stance. We're at home here, we know what our tradition is and believes and how it pulls us to grow, but it's so easy to go into the defensive stance. And so here's what I do with it. I specialized in the stages of spiritual growth, so I understand that there are some people who are fairly immature in the faith who need things to be literal. And then you grow more and more into metaphor the higher you go. Like Kohlberg and Fowler and all the theorists who talk about development, you get more universal. You get beyond the laws of family, beyond the laws of the culture, into the laws of the universe and into that within you that calls you forth. I know that and I picture that hierarchically. So sometimes I have the propensity to sit with a young man like that and think, "You will learn. Someday you will be as smart as I am." But that's not how the stages of spiritual development go. And it's one of the reasons that I chose Stephen Prothero, because I don't like that title, "God is Not One." Because I think that all the cultures come together and ask the same questions. But as I dig into what he's saying something that we wrestle with more probably in terms of multiculturalism. He's saying we need to understand that some people are African American and some people are white, if I put it in our terms, and some people are socioeconomically low income and some people are socioeconomically higher income, and that makes some differences in how we live. And what we do is ask the questions of interest. Tell me about you. Let me tell you about me. You stay being you because we're richer if we stay who we are but still come together under the same roof. I think that's what Prothero is saying. Christians are worried about sin and how to overcome that. Buddhists ask questions about overcoming suffering. But the bottom line is they're all asking, what is the human condition and how do we live best? That's really what he's asking. And that challenges me to remember that we will hear our answers in our own language. And this young man sitting to my right was hearing answers in his language. And yet he, like I, need to be challenged to take that to the next step, to go a little farther. Because on that day, I realized my spiritual growth wasn't done. I needed to go deeper and wider. and rounder and more. Here's the thing. All of the theorists say that we don't grow unless dissidence happens. In other words, we don't grow unless we hit up against a brick wall. There are none of us going out saying, I want a growth experience and I want it now. We just don't do that. And that we tend to go back into our next best growth stage when we're in stress. So as we've watched our country deal with the fear after 9/11, and more recently after Boston, the fear after what's happened economically, we go back a step. We're not our best selves. But Fowler and Kagan, as theorists, say to us that our goal is to become inter-individual. And what they mean by that is we need to be fully ourselves, but to allow the space for those around us in order to live in this complex world. Yesterday, Peter Morales was talking about how church attendance and in all the world's religions are going down. And so a constant question is religion even relevant anymore? And the answer probably is, the answer I know is, here's the answer, yes, it is. It is. Because our goal is to be here, to be challenged, to become more. And Karen Armstrong would say, to learn from one another, to become compassionate. It's energy. It moves. Karen Armstrong reminds us that all the world's religions have an aspect of the golden rule. The one I like for today is the pagan version, which is the energy that you send out comes back three times. I started it, I sent out the energy. I don't know when it's coming back. It's my interaction with the world around me. It's my growing beyond myself to understand others. It's my widening the circle. And I'm going to close with this story that Leo Tolstoy tells, the Hasidics have told. You've heard it. I love it so much, I probably told it the last time I was here, but why would you know that? There is a missionary that gets on a ship and is called to go to an island where they are unfaithed, unchurched. So he goes to this remote island, and he meets the people who live there. He meets with the elders, and it's very important to him. He's a Christian. It's very important to him that they understand the most sacred phrases within Christianity, and that's the Lord's Prayer, the Our Father. And they are an oral people, not a written people, so he has to teach them to memorize it. And so he goes over it and over it, day after day after day after day. Here's the phrase. Here's the next phrase. Here's the next phrase. Do you have it? Yes. Repeat it to me. Teach them. Keep going. Learn this. It's so important. It's a matter of saving your very soul. Finally, they all know it. It's been passed around. They share it. They rejoice in it. They say it. They sing it. They say it when they're working, when they're walking. Finally, he understands that he can get on his ship and go back home. The learning, the teaching is over. It's done. He can go back to his own culture, be at home again. So he gets on his ship, and he's about, 300 feet out into the ocean. And there's a guy in the crow's nest who's looking through his telescope and says, I see something on the water. What is that? It's getting a little closer. It's the people that we just left. They're walking across the water doing this. They get on the ship and say, I forgot the second phrase. You have to tell me. Orthodoxy, orthopraxy. Do I know the words? Or does my very essence do the practice? Does it simply emanate from me? That's the spiritual growth. However we ask the questions in this part of our life, that's the spiritual growth. And that's the goal. And we teach one another. go in peace, feeling the love for your own good bodies, minds, and souls, and out of that love will come your compassion for the world around you. Blessed be.